Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Yeah, good evening. Welcome to the Arsenal Fan Show. Jay Watson in for Johnny Burrow. Back tomorrow as well and Friday, and then it will all return to normal. Johnny returns from his expeditions, wherever he has been. I know he's been a busy, busy boy. But it's been a long time. It's been a long time since I've done this Arsenal Fan Show. Dave and Giles, I mean, it's been a while.
It's been a hot minute, isn't it, Jake?
What's been happening in Arsenal? Much?
Well,
not enough. No.
No, in all seriousness, I'm trying to cast my mind back to maybe the last time I was in this studio. It's been at least 6 months.
I think it was earlier on in the season, wasn't it? Early part of the season.
It's been a long time.
Things were looking up.
Yeah.
Back those days, but since then it's been typical Arsenal.
Dave, that was a proper yeah.
Well, we're back to
the life's been sucked out of you already, and the season's not even started.
It's actually the complete opposite for me, but it's okay. Contextualising. My mindset now is, I know Arsenal aren't going to win anything, so I'm in the mindset, I'm actually quite excited about seeing the kids, and I think we're not the only club in that position, so yeah. I'm sure Chelsea feel the same right now. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we want to talk about at the top of the show, because obviously we had our first pre-season friendly. We always have a curtain raiser against Boreham Wood, and sometimes, like last year, because of all the new signings early, the likes of Aubameyang and Socrates were playing in that game. This time, because we're jetting out this weekend, we played virtually all the kids. And it was interesting for two reasons, because which kids weren't playing was as interesting as which were, because the ones who weren't playing, we sort of knew were going to be promoted to the first team, which is why it's quite exciting. And we actually got that news confirmed today with three players. Yeah. Reece Nelson, Joe Willock, and
Eddie Nketiah,
all given first team squad numbers today. It's confirmed. So none of those played. But you know, we've got someone coming on the line shortly who was at the game to give us a report.
David, so. She's there already.
Is she good?
Yes. we've got Joan Smith on the line. Joan, very good evening.
Good evening, all.
Evening, Joan.
How you doing, Joan?
Staying here? I'm great, thank you.
Jolly good. We were just, I don't know if you heard us there, but we were just sort of talking about it was almost as interesting as the youngsters that weren't going to play against Boreham Wood as ones that did, because obviously we've heard today that some of them have been promoted, but we still wanted to get a view of, you know, the comeback and which kids particularly impressed you from Saturday's run out of Boreham Wood.
Yeah, well, of course, first of all, it's congratulations to Reece, Eddie and Joe for their promotion to the first team, which is obviously a reflection of the quality of our academy at Arsenal. Yeah, I mean, the young lads did really well. And, you know, I think in the first half, Matt Smith was, for me, the standout player. He was very, very good in midfield and a very cheeky one to score that goal. So he was very, very impressive. I felt that in the first half, we were getting overrun a bit. Obviously, Boreham Wood, some of those guys are sort of very physical.
It really was men versus boys.
Yeah, I mean, double the size of some of those boys. But, you know, you're going to come across that. There's always going to be someone bigger than you, and you've got to be able to knock them off the board as much as they try and do that to you. But the second half changes were really good, improved the balance of the game, and especially Amaichi and John Jules, who was outstanding for me in that second half. And all in all, to come back to 3-3 with you know, the score it was at half time, and then going 3-1 down, it was really good. So a good bit of spirit from those Arsenal boys.
Hi, Joan. Giles here.
Hello, Giles.
Hiya. I just wanted to ask really about Amaichi, because there was talk last season that you know, he might not sign a new deal, or you know, he was being watched by a lot of elite European clubs. I mean, what's your feeling on him? What's your take on him and guys like John Jules and is it Yusuf Musa? Have I got his name right?
You know, I mean, I have to say that it's good for the young lads to go out on loan or to get experience elsewhere. But I really feel that if we're going to invest in our youth, we really do need to invest in our youth and play them as much as we can at Arsenal. Yes, they're going to have to go out and get experience here and there. And when you've got players who are very good in key positions, giving them that extra game time is only going to improve their confidence further. And you could see that by the way that the game changed in the second half with those two coming on, with Amaichi standing up at the back post, they're putting the balls there. And it was really that sort of big improvement, and the game seemed to gel very quickly with two of the more experienced young players who are playing on a regular basis. And I hope that they're going to be in the next batch that are going to come through for consideration for promotion to the first team.
Is it tough for Amici, given that Saka, who obviously plays in a similar position, has already had that first team run out and obviously may be ahead of him in the pecking order? I mean, you probably watched more of the two of them than I have. What's your view on that?
I think it's that incentive when someone is in a similar role. I mean, it's that incentive there to say, well, I'm going to, you know, do that bit harder. I'm going to push myself that further because I want to be a first-team player for Arsenal. I want to wear this badge and I really want to do well. So it does give that competition amongst the boys. And I hope that as we go forward, these are going to get more chances to come into the first team, whether it be just a few minutes here or there, but play them. It's pointless having good, talented youth if you're not eventually going to use them. But the competition amongst certain of the boys will only stand good, you know, for coming up to that first team.
Joan, which players do you think are ready to go out on there? Because as you said on Saturday, we're playing men's football and really you need to be... I mean, there's an argument to say that under-23 football, you know, doesn't really give them that kind of grounding, whereas if you send them out on loan to the lower leagues, they get that grounding. Which players do you feel are ready to sort of go out on loan and earn their corn?
Well, I mean, I certainly think maybe Amici would be all right to go out on loan to get some experience of playing in other league. When you're playing at this level, you're playing the same sort of, I might say the same sort of standard, that's... doesn't sound too good. You're playing that same sort of level every week. But when you go out, you're going to be playing in a obviously different setup, being pushed in different ways and working harder, sort of doing more. My only worry is when they do go out on loan, whether they're going to get sort of injuries that are going to sort of set them back when they come back. But going out on loan can only develop that experience. So I think probably the ones, if we are going to send out, would be Amici. And as much as I'd like to see John Jules come through, I think a period with on a loan would do him sort of really good. So I think they're the standouts. And possibly young Matt Smith as well. I think he would be good going out on loan.
He certainly got rave reviews on Saturday that I read.
Yeah, he was very... And I know that there was some... some of the things that I've read online about the number seven sort of not being as perhaps fluid as he should be. But from what I could see, there were times when he really was working very hard. But I think there was some criticism of not getting ahead of who he should be. But from where I was sitting in the stand, from what I could see, he was putting in sort of quite a good performance. But it really was a case that means, I mean, some of those... Bore and Wood players, I mean, they're real units, they're very big, and it was very difficult for some of those lads in the first half to find a way past them. But perseverance paid, changes and more experience came in, and that paid off with a more fluid performance and the goals.
Does that, linking it in to your short video message last week, obviously the guys who were protesting at the shirt launch were really protesting about Kroenke not putting in money for signings, but I'm getting the sort of feeling that part of your message is not only a critique of them, but it's the fact that you actually want to see some homegrown players playing in the first team, and you'd rather see that than perhaps some potential signings that may not pull on the shirt with the cannon on their chest as much as those youngsters would.
Yeah, I mean, I am a very firm believer in when you've got an academy that are invested. Some of these boys have been with us from a very young age and have come through and through and through and through. And if you're not going to promote your youth into the team and give them a chance, it's no incentive for those young lads. So I would like to see some of these younger players getting the chance of coming in, as we've seen now with Eddie, Reese and Joe. It's been hard work for them. But also, to balance that, if we're going to move forward, we've got to have some investment at other levels to get the Arsenal team that we want, to get the Arsenal team that compete at the level that we know that they really should be competing at, and to get the success that Arsenal Football Club deserves. But I'm afraid, from what I saw the other day, as an owner of a club, that wouldn't have inspired me to put any money in when people like that are representing the club on a video. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Talking about youth, Jonah, I don't know if you were aware, but there's a group of young guys now that are sort of forming and trying to bring a better atmosphere into Arsenal games. And apparently they did their own sort of pre-game march, I think they're called Ashburton.
Yes, they did, and I was on the train with them as well.
I bet you taught them a song or two.
You know, I think I learned a few more, I can say. A few expletives there. Yeah. But no,
not radio friendly.
Yeah, but even at friendly, I mean, there's always, there's atmosphere. But I was on the train with them, and oh my goodness, it was good to see a band of young fans, because this is the future of Arsenal. This is what we want to see. We want to see going forward that the fans going forward are going to really bring some life and some spirit, because if it's not coming from us, it's not going to come from the players. And some point is protest about not turning up or whatever. What are you going to do? I mean, the players are still going to get paid, whether there's 100,000 there or whether there's 10. But to have this, these young lads, they put up their banner, they were making a noise, they were singing along, and they were really geeing up an atmosphere, which really is needed. I mean, you as players, you have to earn an atmosphere. But my God, those young lads are going to be a credit to the club going forward. And those are the sort of people we want to see start coming through to the games, and giving them something to shout for and to be proud of their club.
Well said, Joan.
Okay, love you, Joan. Joan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
There we are, Joan Smith there, big Arsenal fan. Chaps, just a quick one on those young players. It's always a bit dangerous, I think, with the young players, particularly the top clubs, because naturally the youngsters within the academy setups and the under-23s at the top six are going to be better than the ones you'd expect anyway at the other clubs. And I feel that sometimes sending them to a Championship League One club can actually hinder their progress, because it's so, so different to what they're used to. And actually, you know, say for instance, an example, Phil Foden right now. I would rather Phil Foden play 10 games for Man City next season than play 50 in the Championship for any old club, because that would serve him better, I believe. Do you not think, particularly with the way that Arsenal's run as well, in terms of the style that's implemented into the players, for some of them, it's actually better for their development to stay within the club?
Oh, yeah. The special ones, you take it by, I imagine they take it by a player-by-player basis. And the special talents, the extreme talents, you probably, you know, the management, and they'll review it and they'll assess it and they'll think, this player, we've got to keep him on board. He's not going anywhere. We've got plans for him. But then there are other players that possibly aren't just there yet, but are above that under-23 level that need to be, you know, and as you said, I think going out on loan is like a make or break for them, because there's some players, they go to these other clubs and they think, I'm a Billy Big Boots.
Yeah. Billy Big Potatoes, know that phrase really well. Styled that out, I would say. That was close.
And they, they think, oh, you know, the training facilities and this and that, they get, you know, they don't like it, they don't get on well.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes to pot. And on the other side, the flip side, there are some boys that go and they really embrace it.
They flourish, yeah.
Yeah, the culture.
I hate to say it.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. But then, I mean, I'm not suggesting for one moment that he would have gone on to be a star, but someone like Chuba Akpom, you know.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Do you know what I mean? When he went out on loan, he was breaking all these records, wasn't he, in the reserves and the development sides. He went out on loan, failed, and then he's just, I mean, look, whether it was just because he wasn't good enough for men's football, we don't know. But do you know what I mean?
He's just won the league.
In Greece, yeah. But whether it can be, can't you? You can have one loan spell. I think of
apologies to Greek listeners.
I think of James Wilson at Manchester United. He came through, didn't he? He scored a couple of goals at the back end. It was under Ryan Giggs, I think. But anyway, he went out on loan, didn't do it, and now he's gone. He disappears, and you have to be so careful of whether it is actually better for them to go out and play football. Whilst it's great to go play with men for their development, sometimes it could actually, you know, hinder them in terms of becoming an Arsenal first team regular.
It also depends on choosing the right club for the club.
Massively.
We look at Serge Gnabry. You know, would he still be at Arsenal if he hadn't gone out and loaned to West Brom and got injured? You know, under Toly Pulis. You know, who knows?
Yeah, but, no, I did see that the other day. Did you see the tweet from? You know, of course, you did. From Hector Bellerin.
Yeah.
You know, the print screen of Tony telling Serge he's not good enough for West Brom, next to Serge winning Bayern's Player of the Year. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. Yeah. We'll do some transfer rumours when we come back. Wilfred Zaha Kieran Tierney. They're the two big names, aren't they, linked with Arsenal at the moment. We'll discuss them and various other stuff with regards to maybe some of these youth players, Emmanuel Smith-Rowe and also Reece Nelson as well.
Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back. It is the Arsenal Fan Show. The chaps from Gunners Town Radio. We've got Dave and Giles in the studio. Jake in for Johnny. Johnny Barbaro will be back next week. Let's do some transfer rumours, shall we? Are you sick and tired of talking about Wilf and Kieran? Because they're both
Wilf scored today, didn't he? In the quarterfinals. Put them through to the semi-finals, was it? I saw.
Yes, he did. He's having a good day.
That's another 5 million on the price tag.
There was, I don't know where this rumour come from, but I think it was Arsenic on Twitter. It said, you know, he's an aggregator, so he just takes whatever news he finds. And apparently yesterday, the news was that Wilf Zaha wanted to leave for special condition because he wanted to talk sort out his transfer situation with the club and come back. And I thought, I mean, you know, have some sort of filter.
I think, personally, my take on it is the press are, I'm not saying the press are always off the mark, but I think they're quite a way off the mark here.
With regards to?
Because I don't think Palace are appalled by Arsenal's tactics. I don't think they're distressed. I don't think they're up in arms. I think Steve Parish is absolutely going to let Wilfried Zaha go if the price is right. And yes, you'd expect that bid to be low. We have offered players in part exchange on top of that, but the press haven't really picked up on it. You know, he went back there on loan. He got them back in the Premier League. He signed a contract when he didn't have to, and therefore his price, instead of being 20 million now, is going to be 50, 60 million. He owes Palace nothing, and Steve Parish knows that, you know, as far as I'm concerned. So it's just a case of finding the right price.
You make a number of really good points. I do think, though, at the same time, Crystal Palace said no very, very quickly and easily to that bid. I mean, look, I'm sure Crystal Palace didn't say to the newspapers the bid was derisory or they laughed at it. Do you know what I mean? That's up for people to decide whether they think that's a derisory bid or not. I mean, if I'm completely honest, I think £40 million is derisory. I think you would never expect Arsenal to, or any club to go in with the optimum maximum price they're going to go in with. Again, we all know that, but still, you know, 40 is low. But I think I just, for Crystal Palace, it's a strange situation in the sense of they're very similar to lots of Premier League clubs now. That we're so cash rich,
Arsenal.
that transfers between Premier League clubs are just going to become so few and far between, because for obviously, you know, as a Leicester City fan, Harry Maguire's not worth £90 million, but we don't need to sell him. We don't want to sell him, so we're not going to just say, okay, this is, you know, we're going to let you join one of the bigger clubs. So look, Crystal Palace, absolutely, of course they'd do a deal. They would do a deal, but you know, for them, who are they going to go get? Well, they've lost Wan-Bissaka and Zaha.
Well, they are linked with someone, aren't they?
But Saint-Maximin, apparently Watford had stepped ahead of Crystal Palace in the chase for Saint-Maximin, because apparently that was...
Where's he from?
Nice. Okay. The Nice player. And I'd read, I mean, again, this is all rumour and conjecture, but apparently he was the one that Palace had earmarked to replace Zaha if he left. Well, Watford apparently now have stepped ahead of them in the chase for him. And so, I mean, Palace can play it how they want, but I mean, if they're going to let him go at a certain price, they're going to have to, you know,
they need a replacement.
They need a replacement, really.
And it's tough when he's away potentially for another 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
So Crystal Palace will want, you know, a resolution to it because, you know, Wilf has made it clear he wants to go. And as they say, Crystal Palace, they wouldn't stand in his way. But at the same time, they're not going to,
And the window's closing as well.
Yeah. I think logic says £50 million and a player from Arsenal they want. And I think that player is probably, if anyone, Callum Chambers. And when we see Tyrone Mings going for £26 million, how much is that? Callum Chambers has to be worth the same as Tyrone Mings.
Mings is the championship player.
Fans player of the year.
No, it's a fair point. But I think lots of people are saying the Tyrone Mings thing is inflated, but... aren't they all?
No, everybody's saying that, not just a few people. Yeah.
No, I know, but aren't they all?
Why don't we just sell him to Villa? Because Villa's paid £14 million for Target and now £26 million or whatever it is for a thing. So they've obviously flushed with money. Sell Chambers to them.
I know, it's unbelievable. You know,
but I think Palace, I wouldn't be surprised if Palace just want straight cash.
Yeah.
No, I think they do. Yeah. But
I think they want cash and a player.
But if the player wants to leave, then maybe there'll be some negotiating. Mm.
Do you both want Zaha?
I do. I want a player like Zaha. Yeah. And I've for a long time I've liked him, even with all his histrionics and whatnot. I just think he's the kind of player that we miss. Ever since Alexis left, we've missed that kind of maverick, that fire starter, that one that can occupy players. You know, even if he, you know, gets about two or three players around him, that leaves space for others. Mm. You know, then there's the product that he delivers as well.
Yeah, I also like the fact that unlike Alexis, he will go on the outside as well as the inside. Yeah. So you never quite know with Saha, because Alexis, every single defender in the league knew after the first knees he was going to cut inside. So Saha's a less predictable outlet. I look back, I've searched, you know, Gunaday 66. Searched Saha, and in 2011.
What, from your own tweets?
Yeah. I just wanted to, because I know that I've always and I actually did say.
Or were you more worried that people dig him out and said he was rubbish 5 years ago?
I will get that anyway. but I did say we should sign him before he went to Man United. I mean, he was so exciting when he burst on the scene.
Well, did you see that tweet the other day? I think it's one of your mates.
Could be anybody.
Yeah. It's Willow. I think Willow was talking about. John Williams was talking. He was somebody sort of got an excerpt from an Arsenal magazine, and that in 2009, about 10 years ago, Zaha scored a hat trick in his Crystal Palace youth team that featured players like, I think it was Wiltshire and all those kind of guys. You know what I mean? So back then, he was seen as the next big thing, and sort of, you know, it's kind of come full circle. And yeah, to answer your question, I would really like him here.
Yeah, no, I think he improves any Premier League squad. Maybe wouldn't get into a Liverpool and Man City 11. I mean, there's actually arguments to suggest he could do. But yeah, I think he improves any squad.
The only dilemma it gives us is I can't see him being able to play Saha, Aubameyang and Lacazette, so the decision to be made there.
That's pretty gung-ho, isn't it?
That is a 4-3-3, unless you sign a really, really good sort of solid centre midfield player as well.
With three lungs.
So you're going to be the rotating between Aubameyang and Lacazette if he goes 4-2-3-1, which I think that's what he wants to do.
Do you think that eventually Zaha might end up a central striker?
Well, that's why
Palace played him there, a lot.
Last year when Benteke was out, they had to, didn't they? But I think also, this is why, and I know Arsenal fans are up in arms about this, but the idea of, if we were offered £70 million by a Chinese club for Aubameyang, I would take it to buy Saha. Because, we've only got one striker in Eddie Nketiah. No, you've got someone who can play wide or central in Saha, and he's 26, whereas Aubameyang's 30.
You know, the goals you're losing, isn't it?
But it's easy to say that. You don't know how many goals Lacazette would have scored if he was playing sole striker every week.
Well, we do. That's why.
Well,
in
the first season from France, he didn't do it.
Yeah, but he's a different kind of striker from Aubameyang. Aubameyang is a penalty box, run-off the shoulder sort of striker. Lacazette's a bit more of a different player. You know, he doesn't take as much shots, he doesn't take as much chances. So
if you were playing a 4-2-3-1, you would play Aubameyang and Lacazette?
No, I would play Lacazette at a 9.5 behind him.
9.5.
And I've always said that.
That's a platform at King's Cross.
Yeah. Hogwarts. I've always said that I think he's, you know, we could play him in the hole behind Aubameyang.
Yeah.
I think they have a good enough relationship chemistry to play him there, but, you know.
Is there a danger the longer we sit on this Zaha deal that somebody else could come in for him? Because the fee that Palace want is very clear. Mm. And at some point, we say, well, sod it, if you won't pay it, we will. Because I don't think Zaha's bothered where he ends up as long as
there's
he's a
no
big
one
six.
Else in the top six who've shown any interest at all, and he's an Arsenal fan, so no, I can't see that. No.
Apparently, he wants to come to Arsenal.
I think he'd just go to any top six. I think he would. Look, of course, he'd love to play for Arsenal, I'm sure.
He wants to be in London.
Yeah. Well, again, and I think that would also very much go in Arsenal's favour. Yeah, it just make you wonder. Do you know what I mean? When a club, it's not that they're saying he's not for sale. They're saying, yeah, you can have him, but this is how much. And there are clubs out there who will bid more than Arsenal. So they need to hurry along.
Yeah, absolutely. And the window's closed. What do you think of this 15% or 20% that they have to keep?
15 profit to United, isn't it?
15 million. That's capped at 15 million, isn't it? Yeah. Or 25%. I mean, that's probably that could be playing a part in struggles.
Of course it is. You know, when people say Crystal Palace are asking for too much, we'll say you have to bear in mind that they're not getting all that cash as well. Mm. Kieran Tierney, then, you've had a couple of bids rejected from already. Again, it feels...
haven't we?
Well, you know...
Last weekend, everyone's all bother shouting it was just a medical to be arranged.
Love sports sources.
And good people, lots of good people said that.
Yeah.
Myself included, because good people told me. But yeah, it's gone very, very quiet.
Mm.
Picked up a little bit again today.
I mean, then there's talk of Napoli, who they're sort of like hovering, whether that's true or not, are they trying to make Arsenal?
I don't know what's going on with Napoli this summer. Linked with Kieran Trippier and Kieran Tierney. I'm not sure.
Juve were linked with Trippier.
Also linked with Juve. I'm not sure where these links are coming from.
And then you could throw in the fact that suddenly Nacho signed a 1-year extension and everyone's saying, oh my God, we're not going to buy him. And, Kolasinac's not a fullback.
Suspense in that.
Yeah, and then we've got Saliba, who apparently we have agreed a fee of £30 million. £2 million for, although we don't have to pay anything now, and he's going to get loaned back, which is bizarre, given that we probably need a left-sided central defender more than anything.
And I've heard the argument that it's the fact that we've got enough defenders is probably the reason why. But I think those defenders didn't really show themselves in a good light last season.
No, so I've seen Purr in pre-season training. You know.
But Celtic, they've signed a replacement, haven't they? Yeah, I'm going to actually say his name as well. Boli, Bolingoli and Bombo.
There you go.
Yeah.
I hope you get better soon.
But Celtic are not the type of club who can financially stockpile players. Mm. So, you know, it doesn't take a genius to work out they've signed a person who plays in Kieran's position, that they are of the belief that it's unlikely he's going to be playing for them next season. Again, are you just thinking this is boiling down completely to cash and Arsenal trying to get it down as low as possible?
I think so.
25 million quid?
I think it'd be £20 million plus add-ons, ultimately.
Can you feel a sense of frustration, maybe, from a Celtic point of view, then, when they've seen the transfer fees of, again, Tyrone Mings, Wan-Bissaka, they're all going at £40-plus million pounds. And look, I know they're always going to be question marks. It's such an easy stick to hit, isn't it, with the player who comes from Scotland. But everything does suggest that Kieran Tierney
Van Dijk, you mean?
Well, exactly. for every Van Dijk, there's a Scott Brown, a Chris Boyd, ones who can do it in Scotland but weren't able to kind of replicate that back in England.
Well, if they
England.
Want 40 million, they should say, we want 40 million. They know they're never going to get anything near that.
I do feel a certain degree of sympathy for them. But
interesting thing is we're not linked with anybody, really, since the Meunier rumours died down. We're not linked with any right back, and yet Hector's not going to be back till November, and Maitland-Niles patently isn't a right back. So we've got two left backs and no right backs ready for the start of the season, and yet we're linked with the left back. But there you go.
So who from that young crop of players do you expect to step up? We've had Emile Smith-Rowe and Reece Nelson both out on loan last season. Do you expect them?
They've both been given first team squad numbers.
Yeah, so you expect them to play prominent.
And Joe Willock, who didn't go on loan.
I do wonder if Emile might go out on loan again.
Well, Leipzig have said they want him back, haven't they? Because he only played three games off the bench. He was injured from January. He didn't get fit till April.
Okay, I was going to ask, because I really, really like the look of Emile. I was a little bit surprised in the sense that he was sat out on loan, but at the same time,
he scored three goals in the Europa last
year. Yeah, I can understand why, if you're going to send him anywhere, the Bundesliga and Leipzig felt like a decent fit. But yeah, so it was fitness, but he didn't play a huge amount, so maybe...
No, he was injured when he went out there and didn't get fit, I mean, with somebody who watches an awful lot of Arsenal youth football, who we'll try and get on the show shortly, says that Barcelona have been sniffing around Emile Smith-Rowe. That's how highly thought of he is. So you're right, he is very, very exciting. But Joe Willock, they were almost competing really for a similar position, I think. And when Smith-Rowe went on loan, then Joe Willock got his run in the Europa League, including obviously playing in the final, and did very, very well. Mm. In fact, did more in 15 minutes than Ozil did in 75, as every Arsenal fan will tell you, barring the few that still love Mesut Ozil.
The few.
There are still a few.
I think it's... it's obviously not the end of the road for Willock. It's not the culmination of his journey, but I think comparing him to his brothers, who are obviously more naturally talented, I think he's done really well to actually sort of like get himself promoted to the first team. And he's a sort of underrated player. I think a lot of people, because he hasn't got that flash and that flair, people sort of overlook him. But I hope he carries on
if finances are what we're told they are, it will be an opportunity for some of these young players, the likes of Willock, Smith-Rowe and Nelson. I need to take a break though. I'm going to come back. I'm going to speak to Omar Reitz, a former Arsenal player, currently working at Watford. I mean, he'd have a decent opinion of some of these young players coming through, wouldn't he? We'll speak to him next.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back. It is the Arsenal Fan Show. Jake Watson for Johnny Barrow this evening. Gunners Town Radio. Chaps, Dave and Giles in the studio. And we've got a former Arsenal player, Omar Reitz, on the phone. Omar, a very good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing? You okay?
Evening,
we're all
good.
We're all good in here, aren't we? Omar, we've just been speaking about some of these young players coming through at Arsenal at the moment. We keep being told that the financial restrictions that maybe Arsenal are going to have to operate this coming season. I mean, what have you seen of a few of these boys coming through, and who do you think could make that breakthrough into a top six side's first 11? Because that's no mean feat, is it?
No, it's not. Listen, it's tough for the boys now. We already know that. The process of coming through at big clubs is very difficult. It's about them knuckling down, working hard, and when they get the opportunity, they try to take it. But, there's a few good players playing there at the minute, and it's, whether they get the chance to do it or not. But it is difficult.
I don't know. You were probably at training this afternoon, Omar. It's Dave here, but they gave. Did you see that? Did you see they gave first team squad numbers to three of them today? To Nelson, to Smith Rowe, and to Willock.
No, I didn't see that. I've only just finished actually down at so I haven't had the chance to have a look. But that's great news, you know. It's nice to be involved as youngsters, and it's nice to, you know, like you say, get the squad numbers and feel part of it, and that'll help them to push on, hopefully. And it's just about being given the opportunity now, like I said.
Can you give us some insight? I mean, you're coaching under 23s now at Watford. Does the club give you a target, or is there a conversation at the start of the season about, you know, how many, or you know, how many should go on loan, how many should, you know, get first team, or are you given sort of you know, just targets as to what the club wants from you in that role?
I think we may have just lost Omar. I thought that was a really good question, Dave, as well. Maybe he's just thinking about this. He's just thinking. No, but it is a good point, isn't it? Because I'd imagine it would vary and differ between so many clubs about what is expected. You know, some clubs are so much better than others at bringing players through. But it is so much harder, isn't it, at a top six side? And sometimes you wonder why they spend so many millions on looking after these players when none of them ever get through.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in the past, Chelsea have used it as a revenue-making scheme, haven't they, sort of thing, you know. And you look at PSG, they just made 40 to 60 million by selling three or four of their youngsters.
Yeah. We have got Omar back on the phone. So, Omar, Dave's question there was, I'm not sure if you heard it, how much kind of discussions do you have at Watford with your role with regards to maybe targets of putting some of your lads into the first team?
Well, you know, obviously, there's always... there's always targets, and there's always a pressure of trying to get boys into the first team, because you have to be showing that you're on the right track of producing players for the first team. Otherwise, you know, what is the point of having an academy? Obviously, when it comes to loans, we'll be told, or we'll look at boys and we'll say, you know what, they might be excelling at where they're playing at a minute in the 23s, and they need to be tested a little bit more. With a little bit more competitive edge to go and play first team football at whatever level they can be pitched at, whoever they may be. But in respect of players coming through, obviously our targets are to push boys on to play at every level they can at the club and break into the first team.
Hi, Omar. Can you tell me what is the relationship between the under 23 manager or coach and the senior manager, and then obviously the loans manager as well? I mean, what's the relationship? How does that work?
You know, the first team coaches and the staff are very good. You know, they try to involve the 23s and down, and they've had boys over this season with three or four boys training with the first team. So we've got a good environment now where we're trying to make sure that there's involvement all round. So everyone feels like they've got a worth, and everyone feels like they're all working towards the same thing. So. And that's quite important.
And then also, what is your job? I mean, obviously, going up through the age grades, technique and I suppose tactics and whatnot are sort of like drilled into them. What's the aim there in the under 23s? Is it sort of like to mirror the first team, or what's the aim there?
Well, you know, obviously we look at what the first team are doing, and we try to implement certain parts of what they're doing, because when they step into that first team environment, they need to be ready. But you know, we have a curriculum, and obviously the boys are still learning from 18s up to 23s. We like to try and have a competitive edge, because it's important that when they step into first team again, that they're ready. There's a lot of 23s now where we've lost that, and it's hard for the players to be able to, for us to bridge that gap. So, you know, it's about analysis. It's about making sure that they're tactically aware of playing different systems. So that they can go into an environment and not feel out of place. And that's even if they go on loan. We try to implement different styles of play. So, again, they know what to deal with when they come up against it. So, you know, there's a whole range of things we try to teach throughout the whole year. But, you know, the most important thing is that we're trying to get them ready for first team football.
You sort of hinted at something there, Omar, that, you know, obviously when you were coming through, it wasn't under 23s, it was youth, then it was reserves. You sort of hinted that because there's no reserve team football now, they're not really getting that physicality, they're not getting to play with senior pros. What's the feeling, in your own feeling, and the feeling in football, do you sense? That do a lot of people miss the old setup, the combination league and reserve football? Because I personally think we're not producing the same number of players at top level because of the lack of that, but that might be a completely naive view.
Well, you know, obviously the problem with the 23s now is that they're all 23s and below, and they're all still learning the game. Whereas, you know, you're looking, where are they going to actually learn from? Where are they going to pick up? Where are they going to pick up key parts of their game if they're not learning from anybody else other than the coaches that are coaching them? Not saying we're not doing it or trying to do a good job, but, you know, there's nothing more, there's no better game than the game, there's no better teaching than the game itself. So when you're playing with senior players, well, when I was playing for Arsenal with senior players, you know, I had players like at times like Dennis Bergkamp might have been playing, or Mark Overmars, or I remember playing a game and it was filled with nearly all first team players and I was playing. So it makes a difference. You learn a lot and you learn quickly, and you're playing against players with loads of experience. So I suppose your learning is more fast tracked that way. But now I suppose there's less pressure. So to improve and get better. So it's just about now trying to deliver a more realistic edge to the game, where when they step out, like that gap between 23s and first team is massive. So the only way we can really bridge that is through taking them out on loan or them stepping into the first team environment and learn over time.
Yeah, is it a task at all to keep these boys motivated, particularly at Premier League clubs, because it is so hard? It sometimes feels that you're almost, well, you mean, I suppose even for yourself as well, that you're developing players to ultimately not play for Watford.
Well, I hope that, you know, that is, I suppose it's the case to a certain extent, but we have to be positive, and I have to be positive, and I look at every player, and I look at, you know, the squad, and I think, you know what, there's work to do here. We need to push these boys to get them as far as we can, to push them into the first team and give them half a chance. If it's not the first team here, then we are giving them an education where they can then go and further their careers at other clubs. So, yeah, it can be frustrating, but I suppose if you think positively, you get positive outcomes.
Okay. Omar, absolute pleasure. Chaps,
thank you
all
very
good.
Much. Yeah. Thank you very much, Omar.
Omar, thank you very much. Really appreciate
thank
your time,
you
mate.
Cheers, Omar.
So, yeah, like, on that one, do you get the point that it feels frustrating sometimes that these, in particular Premier League clubs, they spend all these millions of pounds. Mm. It's very, very rare. I mean, at best, you may see one breakthrough into a first team, and that's had a push. Mm. There's very few Premier League sides where it's littered with academy products. Is there not even a slight part of you that is actually quite excited by not having the cash at the moment, and that you may see some of these players come through?
I feel like that, and I think Chidgey, you know, talking to Chidgey, he feels like that, the same at Chelsea.
It's quite
a
unique situation, isn't it? For the first time in however many years, you've got two of the big six facing, you know, slightly different circumstances, but it means they're going to have to operate a bit differently. Yeah. You know, I'm excited about seeing the likes of Mason Mount and Callum Hudson-Odoi and Reece James hopefully come through at Chelsea. And again, I was talking to you off-air about Emile Smith-Rowe. I think he's got something special. I do, and I don't think going to a Championship club on loan would benefit him. Mm. I think he's someone that you look after and give, you know, as much game time as you can. And hopefully, and again, Reece Nelson, I couldn't believe how little he played at the England 21s.
And when he did play,
we looked a much better team. There are some really exciting players, and there is going to be an opportunity, hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood, for these boys to play.
And I think, Dave, you wrote a blog a couple of weeks ago about the connection between fans and homegrown players.
It helps, doesn't it?
It really does, you know, especially at a time like this where, you know, maybe we haven't got so much to look forward to. Obviously, there's all talks about transfer budgets and whatnot, but to see one of your own come through, fans, they just absolutely, they, you know, there's a bond there, you know, and to see as many, to try and, if you see three or four players in the squad, maybe two start or whatnot, you give them
that bit more time. It's why most of us have been patient with Alex Iwobi.
Yeah.
If he was a signing.
Yeah. He'd be in China already.
Now, my point in the blog was if you accept you're not going to win something, then it's all about the match day experience, and the match day experience will be made better. You know, there's the beer before, there's a beer afterwards, but the match, you want to see good football, and you want to see people playing with a smile on their face, with a pride in the shirt.
Yeah, no,
so,
and it is.
So
it,
I would love to see three or four of our own players blended with the experience, and it's worked in the 80s for Arsenal, it worked in for the 90s for Man United. Maybe it can work again. Who knows? Mm.
And, you know, not to be a localist or whatever, but, you know, there's nothing like seeing...
I thought you were Nigerian. when it suits you, you are.
If we win the African nation, definitely.
I thought Charles was going to go Brexit on us then.
But, I mean, there's nothing more, you know, if you know there's a kid from around the way or whatever, born in the same borough as you or whatnot, and you know they bleed the same as you. Like, we're going to talk about one of the legends coming up. You know, didn't start at the club, but he's a Londoner. Yeah. You know, he gets it. You know, he's a fan. He's, as much as he's a legend, he's a fan as well.
Is he going to give away? Is he going to give away the legend?
Stop talking. No, but it's a completely fair point. But yeah. For the fans, we love seeing it. But at the same time, the players as well, it means more for them. And there's nothing worse than the players just, you know, not necessarily using the platform, it's just one of the clubs they play for in their career. You know, that's what you want. And again, I can talk as a Leicester fan at the moment. We're in a current situation where we've got so many English players and three or four actually academy projects, genuine, in the first team. And it does that connection between, you know, in an era where sometimes we do feel a little bit disconnected, don't we, with our football clubs. Well, that does help bridge that gap.
I'm looking at Hamza Chowdhury, and I think, you know, what a young player from, he is.
Him and Harvey Barnes have been playing at Leicester since they're like 6 years old.
And Chilwell.
That's nuts. Yeah. But Barnes and Chowdhury have known since like 5, 6 years old in the academy. I'll say Ben Chilwell in there. You know, he can throw up English
last
lads.
Year, Jake didn't rate Ben Chilwell. Do you remember that?
Oh, come on. So when you did, you searched your own tweets. You want to search that
No,
tweet.
You told me that yourself.
Yeah. Can I talk my way out of that?
Revise that opinion. Yeah.
No, I said that he'd stagnated a little bit and we weren't that big a fan of him at the time. And we wouldn't have been gutted if he had have left.
Fast forward.
I was wrong. And I'm happy to say
I'm
I was
mad
wrong.
Enough to admit it.
Yeah, no, Giles did very nearly reveal our legend of the week. We'll do that next after this break.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Yeah, welcome back, Arsenal Fan Show. We've got David Giles from Gunners Town Radio, Jake in for Johnny this evening. And it is that time, as Giles very, very so nearly revealed. It's time for our Legend of the Week.
See what your club legend was wearing at classicfootballshirts.co.uk. The place for football shirts.
You know what, I proper like this feature. It's a new thing here on Love Sport. I like reminiscing. And also I like doing these fan shows because sometimes it's either a name or a person we've not really thought about in a while. Or also someone I've completely just never knew, but it means so much to that particular fan. But for this name, it cannot be said. Everyone knows who this guy is, but he's a proper bona fide legend, and everyone loves talking about him. Who is the legend of the week this week, chaps?
He's not born a Gooner, he's made one. His name's Ian Wright. Right.
Yes. He's a proper legend, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's topical this week as well, obviously. Well, we could have done it last week. We did Freddie, which is also topical, but just because of his role in the Adidas kit video just makes it, his name's on the tip of everyone's tongues, and he just such natural in that. He just played that part of being an Arsenal legend so well in that Adidas kit. So yeah,
and it just resonates with all the fans. He's always, since the first moment he got to Arsenal, he just resonated with all the fans. His passion, I mean, even his celebrations, you know. I mean, I've liked him since he was at Palace, you know. South London boy, South East London. I'm a South London boy. I've known about him since, you know, from God knows when. And then I couldn't believe he actually came to Arsenal. And I know people say that George Graham eventually built the team around him. And like, we stopped playing our expansive football. We went quite defensive. But I mean, he was a man apart from anybody else. You know, the way he scored, the way he used to get under people's skin, the kind of goals he scored, the celebrations, everything. He was just a breath of, he was a rebel, it was a breath of fresh air.
It was the same time as like him and Robbie Fowler were the two most naturally instinctive finishers playing in the Premier League at the same time. And we can all talk about Thierry Henry as being an all-time Arsenal great and Dennis Bergkamp, but neither of them were natural poachers like Wrighty was. Yeah. And you just have to imagine what Wrighty could have done playing in the same team that Henry played in, you know, to be honest, because some of the goals, outrageous from all over the pitch, headers for a small guy, just anything, nothing was impossible.
I think it's with Ian, it's, we often know them as footballers and maybe a TV pundit personality. I think it was a blog post he did maybe even as long as a year ago, and I read it, and his story, you know, with his family and his brother, and I just didn't know about it. And yeah, he opened up about maybe struggling at times with things, and yeah, he's a really interesting man who's been and seen pretty much everything. He's a good man. He's a good man.
Yeah, I mean, everyone remembers the video he did a few years ago about talking about his life growing up and then meeting his old teacher in the stadium and whatnot. And
you
know, but also the film with Rocky, the sort of the Rocky coming Rock through Castle, from Broccoli,
exactly,
you know,
and the relationship they had. Yeah, I mean, for me, Thierry Henry's the greatest, but the best striker, best as Dave said, the best natural finisher I've ever seen play for Arsenal, without a shadow of a doubt, is Ian Wright. It's did it on his own. That's what he did. He just knocked the ball up to him, and he just...
You do the rest.
Yeah, and I remember at the 89 night, the second one, I think Perry Groves was the guest speaker, and he would say that Wright just wasn't great. He wasn't great at doing tactics, you know, and George Graham knew it. So he'd just say to them, Wright, just, you know, the rest of the, all the other 10 of you, you know what to do. This is your positions and whatnot. And then Wrighty, just give it to Wrighty sort of thing. And that was the kind of natural, kind of spontaneous, impromptu kind of character he was, you know.
No, he was astonishing. And my biggest regret, Ian Wright, was the season when he broke the record, you know, the 179 and the vest and everything, was that when he got injured, he didn't really get back in the side at the end of the season. You know, Nelke was in the side with Bergkamp. And there's this rumour, story, half-truth, was that Arsene Wenger promised him he would come on in the cup final. And we were 2-0 up with 15 minutes to go, and he didn't come on. It would have been his last appearance for Arsenal at Wembley, in the FA Cup final, to, you know, securing the double. It would have been such a perfect end.
Yeah.
And that's the one regret I've got about Ian Wright at Arsenal. It's such a shame that didn't happen. Because he would have gone to the World Cup if he hadn't got injured, I think, because he was playing that game against Italy where he was, you know, when
they, or something.
Oh, unbelievable.
But it's almost criminal, though, isn't it? We talk now of the overinflated prices for English players, but just even that England squad back then, the things you had to do to get into that England team, the fact that Andy Cole, Robbie Fowler, Ian Wright's England careers were so...
Stan Collymore I hate to say it, but they had so many great strikers
unbelievable.
He said that when he first got into the England squad and he saw the quality of strikers, he couldn't believe it. You know, I mean, the
Taylor definitely didn't like him though.
No.
England literally have one striker now.
Yeah.
Literally
exactly.
Have one striker. Yeah. Just think if they were in that era, what he could have done.
In the each year was it, the when he got the Swede and we got knocked out by Sweden?
92.
Yeah. So Ian Wright was absolutely at the peak of his powers. And he took Merson and Smith and didn't take Wright to that Euros. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, don't get me wrong, two great players, but you know, I think you know there were a lot of people who didn't go to that on that trip that. You know, should probably have done, should have, but Ian Wright definitely should have done.
Yeah, exactly. You know. One regret of him is he came to us at 28, 29. I mean, if he'd have come to us at 21,
but he didn't make it. He was playing for Dulwich Hamlet, wasn't he?
I mean, 22,
or Greenwich Borough, whatever. He didn't play. Yeah,
exactly.
So, even more incredible. Yeah, you know, to achieve what he did.
Yeah, and to think that we got him for 2.5 million, and I mean, obviously, everyone knows the story about David Dean and Ron Nodes and whatnot, and you know, and just you think fast forward now, 25 years later, when talking about Wilfred Zaha, you know, it's the same kind of character, if you want, you know, similar kind of personality to Ian Wright. And
actually, I've just thought of another regret about Ian Wright. That he only got to play one season with David Rowcastle.
Yeah.
That's tragic. Really tragic. Yeah. They loved each other and they were such good friends. And then Ren Rowcastle was sold and there's another legend for a future week. But that was very, very sad.
Because he said when he signed, they stayed up all night, didn't they? He went to Rowcastle and he stayed up all night talking about it. And, you know, Rowcastle was telling him...
He's godfather to the kid. Yeah. And also when at the 89 thing, Ian Wright was asked by the rest of the players and the family to stand in, you know, to speak on behalf of Rowcastle and be in the film talking for Rocky, even though he wasn't there in 89.
Yeah.
So that's how much they thought of him.
So for you, you know, Giles said Thierry is his number one. Is he? Is it Thierry and Ian for you as the outstanding top two?
Well,
who would you have rivaling?
Well, Bergkamp would have to play with anyone. So it would be Bergkamp and one of them. But it would be Bergkamp and Henri, don't get me wrong. But I don't have the same affinity to Thierry Henry that I have to Ian Wright. Because of my age and because he came through the way he did and because of his love for the club and how brilliant he is and the fact that he won't be a full-time ambassador for the club now. He'll do things that he thinks right when they ask him. Yeah. He won't do the Ray Parlour can't say anything out of line. He won't do that.
Yeah.
You know, he's his own man.
Perfect. Well, look, that is Ian Wright, the club legend of the week.
See what your club legend was wearing at classicfootballshirts.co.uk. The place for football shirts.
So just very quickly, a minute before we shoot off, a couple of pre-season games before the season kicks off. What have we got for Arsenal?
Well, it's this ICC America, Cup. We're in America for about... We're playing Real Madrid out there, Colorado Rapids...
Yep, we are playing Colorado.
We're not playing another Premier League side until we come back, actually.
We're in Washington, we're going up to Colorado.
Yeah, but they're all in America, where some of the other ICC games are around the world. The other interesting story we can touch on, actually, because I just thought...
Very quickly.
Well, no, because Lauren Koscielny, because he's obviously... There's word that he'd like to be released from his contract, and and obviously the club rightly is saying, well, if someone wants to buy you, they can buy you. You know, you've given us, it was 9 years yesterday you signed him. And, you know, I think if we don't sign another centre-back, I would keep him as club captain and as a play every two or three games. You know, he's still a great player when
but
he's
fit.
But, I mean,
do you think...
Giles, mate, we've run out of time.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. As interested as I'm sure it's going to be. Look, we need to go. Chaps, it's been a pleasure being back in the studio again with you.
We're
Johnny,
so
we'll be back next week. Goodbye.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.